I'd like to call to order the House Committee on Education for the 17th of April, 2017. We'll be finishing up bills today before our deadline, but I just want to go over what the order is going to be today. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start out with a public hearing on House Bill 3412, and then we also have a work session on House Bill 3412. And then we will gavel into a public hearing on House Bill 2246, and then work House Bill 2246. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3351 and work that. Then we'll open up a work session on House Bill 3215. Open up a work session on House Bill 3358. Open up a work session on 2845, and then open up a work session on 3318, and that should do it for the day. And we will be carrying over House Bill 3208 until Wednesday. And and we will not be hearing House Bill 3395.
Okay.
So that's the order that we're going to be doing today. Do you need me to go over that? Got it.
Good.
Okay. So if we're ready, are you guys ready? You ready? Okay, so with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3412, and I'm going to have Alethea go through and give a little summary as to what the bill is.
Chair Doherty, members of committee, House Bill 3412 establishes a task force on assessment of children who are deaf or hard of hearing to analyze the assessment strategy for children who are deaf and hard of hearing to determine the competency to ensure success in kindergarten curriculum. It establishes the task force membership, including American Sign Language teachers and parents of a child who are deaf and hard of hearing and others. It requires the task force review tools and assessments to track literacy and language development, and it defines those tools. It does require the Department of Education staff the task force and that a report be submitted no later than January 1st, 2018. There is no revenue impact on this bill, and a fiscal impact statement has been issued. It does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, with that, we've got speakers. We've got Representative Sanchez, Ms. Ludwig, Mr. Graham, Mr. Nutter, and Ms. Schuler-Kraus, and those will be the testifiers today, and we'll start out with Representative Sanchez. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Tana Sanchez, representative from House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. You're, of course, to support House Bill 3412. This was brought to me as an issue and concern that there were people in our community who were as disenfranchised as other communities of color or other communities with differing abilities, and I wanted to lend my support to create this this task force to be able to work on this issue, to be able to help change the things that we believe would be really, really important to change for folks who are maybe not getting the best that they can get out of our education system. It was very good to work with Chad Ludwig and the Association of the Deaf to bring this bill to you. I really urge your support, and thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm going to let other people speak who have a lot better skills than I do around this issue.
Okay, Representative Evans, and then we'll ask if see if we have any questions. Representative Evans.
I have to get back to my committee, sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Evans. I represent House District 20. I am also a sponsor on this bill, and proudly so. The origin of education service districts actually has a relevance on this particular bill. I say that because my dad, in the 1960s, worked on the original ESD bill as a speech pathologist. And the recognition that in a recent state report that we had more work to do to make sure that deaf education assessments and more tools were available in the local level seemed to be something that warranted our attention. All too often, we recognize special needs education, we recognize programs and projects, and as has been talked about before here in this committee, we have a lot of ideas to do things. And really, the focus of this particular task force is to try to put the certified smart people in the room, make sure that there's a solid plan moving forward, making sure that the folks that have the most needs are getting the most resources in terms of assessments, more tools, and because of our particular relationship close to Western Oregon University and its master's program in deaf studies, we really can have, I think, a task force that reports back clear recommendations for steps to move us forward. So I just want to thank you very much for this opportunity and encourage support for the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, next we have Chad Ludwig, Patricia Graham, and Guthrie Nuttler. It doesn't have these two people in it.
Thank you.
Okay, when you're ready. Thank you.
Hello, Chair Doherty and members of the House Committee on Education. Thank you for being here today. It's nice to see all of you. The Oregon Association of the Deaf is the oldest civil rights organization in Oregon.
Chad needs to identify himself for the record, please.
I'm sorry about that. My name is Chad Ludwig. I am the president of the Oregon Association of the Deaf.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm here to support House Bill 3412, considered as emergency, to address the needs to implement a task force to address the language deprivation among deaf and hard of hearing students who utilize ASL and English. In the Oregon Kindergarten Readiness Assessment Report, the report showed 41,000 children taken from the kindergarten assessment, and all 54 deaf and hard of hearing students from the data demonstrated significantly low scores in the assessment rating. In December 2016, Western Oregon University published the Community-Based Needs Assessment of the Oregon's deaf and hard of hearing communities. On pages 29 through 35, there's an in-depth report about access to education and significant barriers related to education options and information. The report presents grave concerns for our 1,050 deaf and hard of hearing student children in the state. Again, I want to thank you for the time to observe my testimony, and I strongly encourage that you do pass House Bill 3412. I recommend. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Hello, my name is Dr. Patrick Graham. I'm a professor at Western Oregon University, and I'd like to express my support for this bill. I am deaf since birth, and my parents did learn sign language since I was born. I was identified as deaf at the age of 6 months, and so my family learned to sign, and I was assessed periodically for my sign language use. At the age of 3, the IFSP team, Individual Family Service Plan team, decided that it would be a good idea for me to begin oral education. Because of the foundation I received with sign language, I was able to be successful in my transition to oral education. And through middle school and high school, I was able to succeed without an interpreter to be fully mainstreamed in public education. Because of the foundation I received in sign language, I've been able to be successful in later years. I'm now a university professor in deaf education, and I encourage both American Sign Language and spoken English. How can we have spoken English without a strong foundation in communication first? We need to teach children to communicate first and to understand the importance of becoming bilingual in both ASL and spoken English, written English. I do encourage you to pass this bill to bring us to the next level. I know that it will improve deaf education for children in Oregon. Thank you for all the work that you've done.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Guthrie Nutter. I'm an ASL specialist for the state agency in Washington State. I'm also soon to become director of education at another agency in Seattle. I'd like to talk with you about language. As soon as children are born, research shows us that agile brains are ready to acquire language when they are in language-rich environments. With that environment, children can stitch together words into meaning and meaning into phrases, into full discourse, and interact with different people throughout their lives. Language acquisition is like the foundation for a building. They both need strong foundations. If the concrete for the foundation of your building is improperly mixed, the stories that you add above will crumble. And the same is true for language acquisition. Children without a strong foundation will fail to succeed in later levels. They will have a shanty for language, and they will have deprived interaction for the remainder of their lives. This impacts a child's ability to collaboratively learn, to develop learning skills, employability, and grow into a healthy environment and become productive members of society. How do we support those children? I propose that we do pass this bill in order to establish a program framework to create a language nutritious environment that will support deaf children as soon as they are born. That may help us while there is one moment for interpretation. The funds that we save public education that won't need to be otherwise spent for the remainder of supporting people throughout the remainder of their lives. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, no questions. Thank you very much. Okay,
thank you.
We have four more speakers, and I'm going to call up all four, and one can stay back or bring a chair up. And it is Mark Heil, Elizabeth Schuler-Kraus, and Bryn Powell, and Ann Smith. And so whichever combination you have in there. Or we can bring up two, and then two others can speak if you'd like. Okay. Perfect. And make sure you identify yourself for the record. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hello, my name is Mark Hill. And I'm the president of CP and Deaf Organization. National Organization is a national organization itself. And I want to focus on deaf children who have CP. Do you know that there's a big difference between the numbers of deaf children compared with the general population of children? One in every 25 deaf children have CP, compared with the general one in every 500 at birth. There's a big difference. Chosen Gallaudet Research in Washington, D.C. In 2007, through a test that research that they did, survey. It was important that deaf children receive language foundation and establish a guide to two very important things. There was two. One was emotional support, and the other was physical development. Their brains depended on that. And around 4 or 5, the brain still was pliable and could pick up and could become, could acquire new language. But they identified problems in making, or it was make, there was, after 5, there were more issues after 5 with that process. My personal experience, myself, almost all of those who had experienced issues, language deficits or language gaps or deprivation, you see their stories are pretty similar. And mine, please pass this bill. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next.
My name is Elizabeth Schuler Krause, and I am a teacher of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing in Early Childhood, Early Intervention, Portland area, and I'm here to support House Bill 3412. Over the past 7 years, I've worked to serve deaf and hard of hearing children in the state of Oregon, mainly in the Portland area. In the first 4 years of my teaching career, I taught a bilingual preschool classroom for children who are deaf and hard of hearing, and I wanted to paint you a picture of what that looked like. I had three-year-old children entering my classroom who couldn't follow one-step directions, such as sit down or get your shoes. I had children entering my classroom at 3 years old who had 3 or less words or signs. I had children entering my classroom who didn't even know their own names. So the most shocking part of this to me in starting my career was to find out how many of these children had already received early intervention services and were entering at 3 years old with this little language. The next 3 years of my career, I transitioned into early intervention to try to get at the issue of this. And one of the things that I've noticed and seen is a system that isn't dependent on formal assessment. Formal assessment is only required twice in the first 5 years of a child's education during the critical window for language development. These assessments are often done by providers who have no training in assessing deaf children using tools that are not normed for deaf children. Service plans are being written without the use of formal assessment to guide the process, to develop goals, and to determine service levels. Quality and quantity of services are being more determined by the service provider or the region that the child lives in rather than as the child's needs are determined by an assessment. This creates an inequitable system for education of deaf children in the state of Oregon, and also means that our children are not ready for kindergarten as evidenced by the 2016 kindergarten readiness assessment results that Chad was talking about earlier. This bill establishes a diverse, multifaceted task force to gather data and create a framework to address these issues, including the requiring the use of appropriate assessment tools, increasing the frequency of assessment of deaf children during that critical language development window, providing parents with more information about their child's language skills and how they compare with typical language milestones. And the framework will establish an evidence-based process for providing services, including formal assessment, guiding the writing of the service plan. This will increase accountability for service providers and educational service districts, and will create a more equitable system of services for children across the state of Oregon. But most importantly, it will increase the linguistic readiness of deaf and hard of hearing children when they enter kindergarten. As an early childhood teacher of the deaf and hard of hearing, I ask you to support this bill to ensure that deaf and hard of hearing children across Oregon have equitable access to service, and which will allow them to develop language and be ready for kindergarten. As a hard of hearing individual, I ask you to support this bill so that deaf children in the state of Oregon can have the same opportunities that I had. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions of this panel? Okay, thank you very much. And the last two we have are Ann Smith and Bryn Powell. Thank you. Thank you very much. Don't forget to identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Bryn Powell. As a member of the Oregon A.G. Bell chapter and a teacher of the deaf at Tucker Maxson School, I am here in support of House Bill 3412. However, we do have some suggestions regarding changes we would like to see. Tucker Maxson is a private nonprofit school in Portland that teaches children who are deaf and hard of hearing and children with typical hearing how to listen, talk, and achieve excellence together. The children at our school use spoken language to communicate. We agree that assessment of outcomes of intervention and tracking the progress of children with disabilities is a worthwhile endeavor. At Tucker Maxson, we evaluate our children from birth to age 3 at least every 6 months, and our children ages 3 through 12 annually using standardized, norm-referenced, and criterion-referenced assessments. After reviewing the bill, we are concerned that the 9 members currently identified for the task force are too narrow in scope for the goals of this team. We would like to see the addition of an early intervention provider who works specifically with children using spoken language only, as this would be consistent with other representation categories. The inclusion of an audiologist is paramount, as the assessment of the cognitive, language, and speech skills of children who access auditory information cannot be interpreted accurately without information regarding their hearing thresholds and speech perception abilities. This representative on the board is necessary to help create procedures and methods for evaluating hearing levels, as well as the device settings in a standardized way. We also feel that a representative like a psychologist with expertise in the assessment of cognitive function of children, particularly children with hearing loss, is needed, as it is not in the scope of practice of the other professionals listed on the bill to interpret cognitive testing. A representative of the EDI program would be an important member as well, as they have a wealth of data already collected regarding children with hearing loss, and it would be practical to collaborate. Finally, a representative from a regional program services would be beneficial as well, as this is where all public services for children who are deaf or hard of hearing are currently provided. Therefore, these would be the programs who would likely be administering the assessments that the task force selects. We also have concerns regarding the vagueness of the qualifications listed for the members of the task force. For example, for the parent representatives to the board, is the communication mode listed applicable to the child, the parent, or both? Is the age of their child relevant given the task force's focus on birth to age 8? For educators on the board, would they be required to currently be practicing and licensed? Is the age range that they teach relevant given the task force's focus on birth to age 8? As mentioned in the bill, the superintendent of public instruction is slated to appoint all members of this board. How will this process happen, and how will the qualifications of the individuals be evaluated? Finally, should there be guidelines that the representatives on this board represent the various public and private agencies that serve the children who are deaf and hard of hearing all throughout the state so that there is diversity in thought? At Tucker Maxson, we strive to be leaders with regards to the listening and spoken language instruction for children who are deaf or hard of hearing, and we may be in support of the general aims of this legislation with the mentioned changes and hope to be involved in helping to improve this bill and making it a reality. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Ann Smythe, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. As a Portland resident, a teacher of the deaf, and a parent of a child who's deaf, I'm here to tentatively support House Bill 3412. I want to give my full support, but I do have some concerns about some of the bill's language. The bill uses English throughout. This term should be clarified to differentiate between spoken and written language. The use of English does not acknowledge that children with hearing loss may be learning other spoken or signed languages. For example, at Tucker Maxson, where I work, we have children whose first and primary languages are not English. In their first 3 years of life, they learned Spanish and Russian and only started learning English when they entered preschool. With this in mind, the word English should be modified to represent a child's home native or primary language. My own daughter, who's deaf, learned two languages, and we need to make sure the assessment task force acknowledges that children with hearing loss are born to families who speak many different languages. It will be important for the task force to select assessments that are validated for the use of children who are bilingual or multilingual. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of this panel?
Yes.
Yes, Richard, Representative Vile.
Madam Chair.
I almost called you by your first name. I'm sorry.
That's okay. My mom does too, so it's okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
I wondered if you ladies had worked on any amendments with the proponents of this bill.
No, but we kind of got in on this a little late. We found out about this late, but we did send a pretty detailed email to Chad Ludwig today, so he may not have read that yet, but we want to be involved. We're happy to be involved, but we came in a little late.
Well, thank you very much for coming, and I, given the way the process works, I just encourage you to follow the bill and approach those that are working primarily on it. But thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. And same sort of a comment, because these are the sort of things that this is a bill that's going to move to Ways and Means, and in our business, that means it goes and talks money, and then it goes from there. But definitely stay involved in the process, and even though they have certain designations as to who will be on committees, that doesn't mean that you can't come to the hearings and have input and that kind of thing. So I just want to encourage you to keep in the loop.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, those are the last ones we had signed up for House Bill 3412. Is there anyone else? Okay, not seeing any. I closed the public hearing on House Bill 3412 and open up a work session on House Bill 3412. Representative Hernandez.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3412 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3412 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative
McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. And I close the work session on House Bill 3412. Okay. Thank you all very much for coming today. But you can stick around. You can stick around. Okay, with that, I would like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2246. Maybe?
Johnson's.
No. I haven't gaveled yet, so.
There's just a couple of words. They're supposed to come in 1 minute.
Do we want to do a quickie bill in 1 minute? Move something the Ways and Means? No, that's.
Do you want to do?
We'll stay stand at ease for a few moments until our other folks come. Okay, with that, I will open up a work session on House Bill 2845. If you could go through and explain it.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2845 requires the Oregon Department of Education to convene an advisory committee consisting of 14 members to develop statewide ethnic study standards for the adoption into existing statewide social study standards for grades K through 12. There is a -4 amendment which replaces the measure. It establishes an advisory group to identify where current statewide social studies standards fail to recognize the history's contribution and perspective of ethnic and social minorities. Requires the advisory group develop ethnic study standards to propose for adoption into existing statewide social studies standards. And it requires the Department of Education complete the task no later than July 1st, 2021. There is no revenue impact, and it has a fiscal impact statement which has just been uploaded.
Okay.
And it has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay.
Oh, should he move his own down?
Pardon?
Should he move his own down?
Oh, no. Here.
You're not.
This bill, so we'll have you do it.
Okay. Sounds
that's
good.
You. That's you.
Okay. Very good. Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -4 amendment.
Okay. Representative Wilson moves to adopt the -4 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, is there any objection? Okay. With not, the amendments are adopted.
And Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 2845 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Wilson moves House Bill 2845 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee of Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none.
Sorry.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was curious. I am in support of this bill, first and foremost, and I just was wondering, on the addition, when you're talking about the advisory committee, has there been any thought to making sure that we are also inviting to that table social studies teachers? Teachers are involved in the...
We actually did have that conversation with ODE and are making sure that through our appointment process that that gets that happens. And just for those of you who are... looking at the -4 amendments, we did work with ODE to clean up the bill a little bit more and remove some of the reporting requirements, remove a few members of the committee, remove some of the curriculum and teacher learning requirements that we had on there, since this is a standards bill and not related to that. And we brought the fiscal impact statement to minimal instead of what it was originally with the -1.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. With that, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll? Do you want to?
Representative Evans.
Okay, Matt, would you like to read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solomon.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
No.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and it is as amended and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2845, and I open up a public here a work session.
Public hearing.
A public hearing on House Bill 2246. Okay, and this is the report from the committee that we had. And so Representative Smith-Warner, Representative Wilson, Representative McLean, Representative Johnson.
They should be coming up, and I'll let Matt introduce it. They're going to talk about the
And they're going to be talking about the bill and everything else and the work group, and it's our final report. First of all, while you guys are sitting there, thank you very much for volunteering for this committee. I appreciate the time and effort you put into it and the work product that came with it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe our friend Carl Wilson is going to go first. We are sitting out of order to make it as confusing as possible.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's only Monday. We can take it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass. My pleasure to talk about House Bill 2246 and a bit about the activities we've been engaged in here for a while. Just as a reminder, at the outset, the makeup of the work group was bipartisan. The work group on ballot measure 98 was formed at the request of the Speaker's office due to testimony received on the 8th of February. That was an informational session before this very committee. Stakeholders on this work group include Confederation of School Administrators, OSBA, that's Oregon School Board Association, Oregon Educational Association, the group Stand for Children, Reynolds School District, Northwest Regional Education Service District, and Focus Point Communications. Two state agencies were represented, and that included the Oregon Department of Education and the Chief Education Office. And the work group, as you have probably gathered by now, met on four different occasions. We have been updating the committee on the work group process as it goes. At the March 24th meeting, the work group developed a proposal that was agreed to by most of the members. The work group decided to meet again on April 7 to consider a proposal produced by Stand for Children. The work group was unable to agree on either proposal. Three other representatives and me met separately to consider both proposals. We believe the final proposal provides flexibility for school districts and maintains fidelity to the voter. And the work group focused on policy questions. A little about that. We will leave the conversation surrounding the timeline for the dollar allocation and the amount being allocated per student to the Committee on Ways and Means. We're providing you with two amendments. The First Amendment details our recommendation with Representative Smith Warner and Rep. Johnson will explain. And the Second Amendment includes our recommendation and the statutory changes suggested by the Chief Education Office.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. A couple things. First of all, we recommended that school districts be allowed to submit four-year plans. This is something that came up both in the public testimony, during the rulemaking, and as part of our conversation. So the idea is to require the district to submit four-year plans, even though you're only going 2 years at a time in biennium. The idea is it'll help you to kind of come up with a longer-range plan that you then resubmit every 2 years. We did want to account that, however, in the first biennium, because the first four-year plan would be a three-year plan. We have language in it that says, okay, the first one will be a three-year for the second year your biennium, and then going forward, etc. We also then recommended that districts are provided flexibility in spending the measure dollars depending on the dollar amount they receive. There was a repeated concern expressed during the work group meetings, as well as in the rulemaking process, that districts needed flexibility in their ability to spend the dollars, being that some districts would receive less than $100,000 a year, and with the requirement of three separate elements of the measure, that might be challenging for them to do with a small amount of funding. So the second recommendation is to categorize the districts depending on the dollar amount they received, and then kind of cut them into three categories. Small districts who receive less than $100,000 a year would only be required to spend funds on one of the three areas. Those three areas being career technical education, college-level coursework, and dropout prevention. Then we came up with kind of a medium-sized district, which are those who receive between $100,000 and $350,000 per year, double that per biennium, for those of you who are counting along at home. Those districts would be required to spend, they would be able to spend money in just two areas, and one of them would have to be career and technical education. And then finally, large districts with $350,000 or more per year would indeed have to expend the funds in all three strands.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Mark Johnson, House District 52. I had a good experience being a part of this group, very collegial atmosphere. I think we had a good free exchange of ideas and thoughts and opinions. I think everybody had a chance to get their ideas on the record, and I think that what we've produced is, I think, a good issue. I think we had two questions heading into our work group. One was flexibility and the other was fidelity. Number one, flexibility for districts in implementation, because not all districts are alike, certainly with different sizes, with 196 school districts ranging from a handful of students to, you know, tens of thousands of students. It's a very diverse network. So I think we have flexibility in there that addresses, to the extent possible, those concerns. But fidelity, I think, in terms of what did the voters vote for? What were they approving when they said yes to Measure 98? And I think that what we put forth, I think, does honor that, in that first and foremost, it is career technical education. It will be the most emphasized measure. But again, it's all about, you know, the intent in behind Measure 98 was improving high school graduation rates. So there are multiple vehicles that can be chosen. Each of these is data-driven. There are outcomes attached to this. We've tried it before. We know these programs work, from dual credit to, you know, programs to fight chronic absenteeism. So if we do these things in any greater degree than we currently are, we will end up graduating more kids, and that really is what it's all about. So all that to say, I just appreciated being a part of the group and working with these fine colleagues. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Susan McLean, House District 29. I'm supposed to be providing a summary, and so my summary is simply that, as you know, we went into this work group with four issues that we were going to look at. And the first issue has been described to you as allowing money to be spent on eighth grade, which provides some flexibility in grade for level districts who really need some work and some programming to actually do the work they want to do at the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade level. And so, as was pointed out, we've put in 15% for that eighth grade type of work so that they can start those programs that they need to express and really support those students at the high school level. The second, and that is the flexibility issue. You've heard about the flexibility and the fact that it's going to be provided on how much money each of the districts are actually receiving during the biennium. And then the third area is really dealing with the idea that we are trying to make sure that small schools were treated differently and that they were given some support in a way that maybe the middle or in the large schools didn't have the need for support. And then the fourth area, which we didn't cover, was one that I wanted to mention because it was on the supplant and supplement issue, dealing with existing and expanding programs. And it was something that I brought up, but I was willing to let go of after we talked very extensively with the Department of Ed, and I did spend some time with Emily on this, making sure that the rules that have been made actually acknowledge this issue, because there is a difference between definition of supplement and supplant at the federal level because of some of the CTE programs. But I really feel that the rules cover this issue and this concern and will actually be dealt with the schools that have some of those issues. So I want to thank you for allowing me to be on this work group. It was a great work group, and we did a lot of work, and we really, I think, talked together about what's best for kids and what's best for our districts to do the job they want to do so all students can succeed.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, if I might add just a couple of other things here. We were very careful to handle smaller districts gingerly in this process. And we established sideboards to do that. If I might explain just for a minute what we mean by that. Imagine perhaps a school district is appropriated a specific amount of money for 1 year and creates a plan based on that dollar amount, say for an example, $98,000. During the second year of the biennium, the district is appropriated $103,000, which moves them into the medium district size. Well, by being allocated several thousand dollars more the following year, they're now required to do an additional program area. Well, the sideboard articulates that districts in the middle of a biennium who receive additional money for the second year are not required to change their plan, far less disruptive. Stakeholders at the work group suggested this idea to prevent obvious hardship on the smaller districts who create biennial plans. One other thing I might mention, too, and that is since pathways to high school began as early as kindergarten, the work group recognized the need to use Measure $98 on programs leading into high school. As you know, some of the testimony that we had early on indicated they felt that that money should be spent in middle school, starting at the earliest levels in middle school. But we thought that was probably not preferable to what we chose to do. The last part of the recommendation addresses the need for Measure $98 to be used towards students in grades below high school. We recommend that school districts are allowed up to 15% of their non-administrative allocation on activities in eighth grade that align to three areas. And the recommendations discussed today were produced, obviously, from input with stakeholders and the state agencies on that work group. So thanks again. It was a pleasure to work with this group. At times, I kind of wondered how this was all going to turn out. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a good response to that. So thank you.
Well, I do have a question, and it deals with the amendments, because it was Amendment 1, which was the recommendation, and then there was Amendment 2, which was your recommendation, coupled with some of the recommendations of the Chief Education Office. And I don't want to, well, I am going to put you on the spot. Just which of the two amendments would you prefer?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to retroactively, for the record, say my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45, Northeast Portland, Maywood Park and Park Rose, and I'm sorry I didn't do that earlier. I have to give kudos again to the agency representatives, both Emily from the Oregon Department of Education and Colt Gill from the Chief Education Office. They were excellent. It was important to have them in the room as part of the conversation, because Emily had gone through the rulemaking process. She brought great input of having gone through that. And then Colt Gill and the Chief Education Office had done, after the election, had kind of done this tour around the state, talking to many of these same stakeholders, saying, what are your issues? What are you excited about? What are you worried about? Et cetera. And so they had come up with a number of items, some of which, and my understanding by reviewing them, most of them were fairly technical in language tweaks and such. For example, allowing School for the Deaf and other OIA places to apply for these funds as well in a way that wasn't, because they weren't specifically called out in the language. And there were some actually on their original list that they didn't include, because they were just resolutions that hadn't happened as a part of what the work group came up with. So again, I am not a technical expert from Ledge Council and far from it. But my understanding is that those proposals are, I would say, perfectly acceptable as well.
Okay. I wanted to add to that, if I could. I really looked through all of those fairly extensively, and all of the comments that were made and the suggestions for the amendments on that second list were coming after looking at what the Department of Ed and what the Chief Education Officer were saying. This is the kinds of amendments we need to be able to make this program function as we review the plans, as we're able to hand out the dollars, as we're able to look and make sure that they're following the criteria. Mm-hmm. So I would, if someone has said that there's something there that's not technical, I would want to know what it was so we could discuss that. But no time during the time that those were presented or we discussed them was that they were anything but technical to make sure that we could actually have the Department of Ed do their job.
And that was the dash twos. Yeah.
Yes.
Dash twos.
The other thing I wanted to say real quickly, because I forgot it, and that was that there were a couple of issues that the committee did not cover, but they were brought up, and they were basically put in the dialogue that we had. And so it seemed only fair that we mention that some of the legislators were concerned about the fact that there are basically some review requirements that could cost some money for school districts, and that the second recommendation, basically dealing with the amount of dollars that would take for the review or the audits of this program, were something that someone may want to discuss in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I vouch for the dash twos. I think they're a good package.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say I really appreciate all the work. There's been a tremendous amount of work around this, and especially looking at that flexibility, looking at how this can affect different size districts, looking to make sure that we're really representing what folks had really intended with this bill, with this kind of taking the will of the voters. And so I just sincerely appreciate all the work on this.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative
Vile. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll echo what Representative Solomon just said, but I would like to hear maybe just a word or two from one or more of you about that matching the intent of the voters concept, because I know that as I've struggled with this bill and listened to constituents, it's been typically, come on, are we really going to get shot back in the school? Are we really going to do the things that we need to do so that perhaps non-college-bound student really is being prepared to earn a living. Do you feel like we've stayed true to the spirit of that ballot measure with this proposal? Is the question. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Vial, I come to this after putting over 2 years on the Measure 91 Marijuana Legalization Committee, where we attempted to carry out the will of the voter. As I compare this process to Measure 91, it's like night and day. In both of those issues, we had many, many competing interests. In Measure 91, I wish in retrospect we had done more things that really adequately represented the will of the voter. I brought that value into this process and feel that we did an extremely fair job in representing the somewhat diverse interests in this bill. I do think it was all about CTE, but we realized that when you're looking at the smaller schools, it could be difficult, if not impossible, to have, with the funding available to them, a credible CTE program. So we offer flexibility at that level. But as we move to level two and level three, CTE is certainly a prominent part of both of those. So I think looking back on the whole process, I can feel, personally, I feel extremely good thinking back at the testimony that we took, boiling it down to what we came up with, and I think it stayed amazingly on course. Just my opinion.
Thank you very much.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have three signed up, Brian and Parasa, and then Lori Wimmer. Can all come up at one time or different, up to you. Okay, thank you. Whichever.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the House Education Committee. For the record, my name is Parasa Chanrami. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Manager for Stand for Children, also speaking on behalf of the Measure 98 Coalition today. First off, we want to thank Chair Doherty and Speaker Kotek for convening the Measure 98 work group. We also want to thank Representative Smith-Warner, Wilson, McLean, and Johnson for all of their time and dedication to the work group. We really appreciate the opportunity to engage in this work group process with representatives from the Oregon Department of Ed, the Chief Education Office, OEA, COSA, OSBA, the CTE STEM Employer Coalition, as well as education leaders from Northwest Regional ESD and the Reynolds School District. We support the Dash 2 and encourage you to adopt it and pass House Bill 2246 today. One thing we'd want to clarify is, regardless of the overall amount that's allocated for Measure 98, the three tiers that Representative Smith-Warner had outlined, the funding range amount would stay the same regardless of how much is allocated to the measure. And we think that the Dash 2 embodies the Measure 98 work group's final proposal and feel like it strikes a really practical balance between providing districts with both the flexibility while preserving the intent of the law. So thank you again for your time today, for the opportunity to speak, and please adopt the Dash 2 and pass 2246.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Krieg?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Krieg. I do own Focus Point Communications, but in the role in the work group, which I was very happy to have participated in, I was representing the CTE STEM Employers Coalition, and that's made up by a large group of industry organizations, from businesses to labor, who have been active in the building for the last 6 years, really pushing for CTE and STEM funding. As I said, I appreciated being a member of this work group, I'd like to thank all the participants in it. It was an informative, thoughtful, and at times spirited conversation, but what was at the core of it, the great passion that everyone showed to try to move things ahead for the children in this state. And The proposal, the dash two, I believe is a balanced approach. It makes the needed adjustments, particularly for our smaller schools. I heard a lot of feedback from the CTE community, at the different schools that we've been giving pathway funding to or the revitalization grants about their concerns when they were at the smaller level about trying to cover too much ground with very little money. So I think that this will be a big help, and it's one we support. The measure still stays true, I think, to the proposal that the voters voted on, and we would urge your support of the dash two and then the adoption of the measure.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panel? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Lori?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For your record, feeling a little lonely today. Lori Wimmer, for the record, representing Oregon Education Association's 44,000 members, and we too were participants on the work group. And you're hearing in me a little disappointment. And that's because we really care about the students getting this money to do the right thing for kids. Means a lot to the members of the Oregon Education Association. And we feel that though the great work of this work group progressed a certain distance, as you've heard, it didn't get us where we need to go on three critical areas. I would ask you to look at the document that I put on the OLA system. I hope it's on the OLA system. Yeah. Now that I took the liberty of rearraying the Department of Education's run on how this would work under the Dash 2 proposal. According to House and Senate districts, so you can look up your own school districts by House and Senate district. And what you will see is all of the districts in yellow who will have no flexibility or local control with respect to Measure 98 as the Dash 2 contemplates it. Why? Because they have to do all three of these pieces. Irrespective of whether they are North Clackamas that has a wonderful Sabin-Schellenberg Center and a great dual enrollment program and a lot of poverty and therefore a lot of kids who could use all of that money powerfully focused on dropout prevention. Instead, they have to use the money if they apply for that grant across all three program areas. Additionally, what you may not know is there are 11 school districts, primarily rural districts, that will get no money whatsoever. And there are probably, in my estimation, about 81 school districts whose grant will be insufficient to cover the cost of the program audit at the end of this grant period. They will have more money going out the door in program audit expenses for which they are responsible than they will get in the grant itself. For these reasons, we respectfully file a minority report of sorts as participants in the work group. We do not believe that with respect to local control, if it's a value, it should be a value for all. Resource sufficiency. There are some districts that just simply can't make it pencil out, so only some kids will benefit from this program. And bureaucracy. The performance audit that the audits division told us is an expense that can easily come to $100,000 to $150,000 per school district who would be a grantee. We should make participation less burdensome and expensive, and we have an alternative on the Senate side, Senate Bill 353-1, which fixes all of these programs while also respecting local control, legislator decision making, and voter intent. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Ms. Wimmer? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, that's all we had signed up for House Bill 2246. Anybody else? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2246 and open up a work session on House Bill 2246. So.
Thank you. Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing no objection, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2246 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2246 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile. Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2246, and I open up...
Actually, do you want to just do 3215?
Okay, and then I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3215.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3215 requires school districts submit to the Oregon Department of Education all state-related debt agreements, certify annually that monies are sufficient to pay debt service on all bonds, and receive approval from the Department of Education to enter into diversion agreements for new funds. There is a revenue impact statement of no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact statement has been issued. And the bill has no subsequent referrals, but we've been asked to send it to, or we're sending it to Ways and Means.
Okay. So, Representative Hernandez?
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3215 to the floor without recommendation of the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3215 to the floor without recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Could the clerk read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes and the bill is sent over to Ways and Means. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 3215. Okay. Yeah, because he's not here. Okay, I would like to open up a work session on House Bill 3358.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3358 establishes an advisory group to advise the Oregon Department of Education on English language learners, and it establishes the advisory group membership representation. There is a dash one amendment which replaces the content of the measure to create an advisory group on English language learners programs to advise ODE on the Oregon Statute 327016. Which are reporting requirements on English language learner programs. And it requires ORS 336079, which is relation to the reporting requirements on Department of Education on English language learner programs as well. To ensure that the process aligns with statewide standards, and it requires the advisory group examine development implementation of ELL programs. This bill has no, that version has no, the original version has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. And the last hearing was April 5th. And then for the dash one, there is no fiscal impact. And then for the dash one as well, there's no revenue impact.
Okay, Representative Wisnett, would you like to speak on your amendments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, committee. I know you're working hard to the vice chairs and committee. Honorable committee members, for the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53.
Thank you.
The committee's worked hard. We had a meeting with all the stakeholders to go out and be sure that the Dash 1 is supported by all the stakeholders in this. Remember, this is the bill that we're going to be looking at the programs that we passed for ELL, English Language Learners. That was 3499, did I get that right? $12 million plus the special weight. So we had a meeting of the Speaker's office helped organize, and we had all the people involved, and we agreed to the advisory group, the number of members, and what the task would be for this. So no opposition, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Solman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so
I appreciate that. So you're coming back and going to look back at further other legislation. And I just can say how much I appreciate that, because so many times we are just pushing task forces and work groups. And I'm kind of curious sometimes, like, how is that working? We're all working so very hard to get things pushed through, and like to have the reflective time to see if there needs to be tweaks or changes and things like that. And I'm in full support of this bill and really appreciate the work. Work on this.
And Madam Chair and Representative, thank you for the comments, and that's the purpose. This is very important. I think that English language learners and children in poverty are really have an impact on our absentee rate, our graduation rate. So we've dedicated this additional funding, and we have additional state school fund weighted. So I think this advisory group will serve a great purpose.
Yeah, fine. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. We had no one signed up for this bill. Even though, okay. So with that, I close the. We're going to continue with the work session on House Bill 3358.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash One amendments.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the Dash One amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none. Is there any objection? Okay, with not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3358 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3358 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solomon.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and we will sign Representative Wisnett as a carrier for the bill. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3358. And do we have the other guys here? How about 3318?
Yeah.
Okay, and open up a work session on House Bill 3318.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3318 requires that school districts conduct functional behavior and analysis and develop behavior intervention plans for every student who has an individualized education plan or IEP, or student who places other students or staff at risk of bodily harm because of their behavior. There is a Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendment. Dash 2 amendment changes the definition of service provider to include those willing to provide service to student to those of an IEP or 504 plan, and those not holding the administrative license or teaching license. Changes the requirement that school districts conduct functional behavioral analysis to include students who place others in serious bodily injury, and require school districts ensure behavior intervention plan does functional analysis by qualified person. The last hearing was April 3rd. And this bill has no subsequent referrals as written. There is a fiscal and revenue statement for the Dash 2 amendment. For the Dash 2, there is no revenue impact. And for the Dash 2, there is minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Do we need Sarn to come back up and explain what this was? Mm-hmm. Or are we fine? Okay.
They've never heard the Dash 2.
Pardon?
They've never heard the Dash 2.
They hadn't heard the Dash 2. Do you guys need an explanation? Are you ready? Okay. Looks like we're good.
First down.
Oh, pardon?
I'm saying first down.
Okay.
Keep going.
Do you have a question, Representative Hernandez?
No, I thought he did.
Okay.
Sorry.
Fine. Okay, with that, Representative Hernandez.
Or
did you already do that?
Yeah.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3318 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3318 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Who's going to carry it?
Representative Solomon.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excused.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye.
With that, the motion passes, and I'll sign myself as carrier since it's my bill. Okay, thank you very much. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 3318.
And then we're waiting for Johnson for
3318. We'll stand at ease for a moment while we wait for Representative Johnson.
Could we work?
At ease, I'm going to open up a work session, public hearing and work session on House Bill 3351. Could you explain what it is?
Chair,
and I'm going to be Mr. Johnson today.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 3351 requires the Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to prepare an annual report related to the duties, powers, and functions of the commission. Requires the report include number of teaching administrative licenses that were issued in the previous year, and requires the report include trends in the number of licenses issued, along with the detailed trends and sanctions imposed on the number of licenses. It does also allow a person to file a complaint with the commission against an individual licensed by the commission, and it allows the commission to request verification that attempts were made to resolve the complaint at the school district level. A revenue statement has been issued as no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal impact statement of minimal impact.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, I was going to speak in your place, but now you're here, I don't have to do that.
I could let you handle it, Madam Chair. That would have been fine. Thank you. Good afternoon, committee members. Mark Johnson, House District 52. This bill is about our Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. It's an issue that I've worked on for a number of sessions now. One of our efforts a couple of sessions ago resulted in a Secretary of State audit of the department that shed some really interesting light on the comings and goings and doings of the commission, and really said that there's some work to be done here. This bill doesn't directly address that because in the intervening time, we do, in fact, have some really strong leadership at the commission now that I think are making some tremendous improvements over their job performance and so forth. But this bill does get at the heart of a couple of things that I think will help to improve their performance. It's basically in two sections or two parts. You'll recall, I think, or for those of you who are new, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission really handles licensure and discipline issues with teachers. So it's teachers, it's administrators, it's all those folks and so forth. They have to get their licenses through TSPC. But they also handle discipline. And at the current time, it's really, really easy for anybody at the local level to file a complaint against an educator. And there isn't really a requirement that that complaint have to go through any kind of filters, if you will, on its way up to the state agency. And when a complaint is registered against an educator, the commission has to go to work to investigate that complaint, which can take some time occasionally. But the problem can be that while they're under investigation, there is this, if you will, scarlet letter on that educator that may or may not be legitimate, but yet it's attached to them, and that can become concerning, as you can imagine. Could be my kid didn't play as much in soccer practice as they should. Those type of things could conceivably rise to the level of TSPC, and we certainly don't want them to have to be burdened with that. So it's simply in Section 2 of the bill, Section 3 of the bill, says prior to beginning an investigation based on a complaint filed under the previous paragraph, the commission may require verification that attempts were made to resolve the complaint through a complaint process at the local school district level. So this gives local school districts the ability to put in place requirements to say these complaints have to go through a process before they could conceivably be passed on by a school district, be passed on by a superintendent or someone to make sure that there's some checks and balances there. So that's number one. And that is something that the commission themselves have been asking for and their employees there. The section two ahead of that, though, actually is a little bit of expansion. TSPC also has oversight over our teacher prep programs, our colleges that train teachers and so forth, which, of course, there's hardly any more important work than training good qualified classroom teachers. So there's a little bit of language in here as well. It talks about an annual report that they're to make to us, talking about the number of teaching licenses and administrator licenses that have been issued, some trends about the numbers of licenses, trends related to top areas that folks are going into for teaching, a summary of activities related to educator prep programs, including changes they may make in requirements, a summary of the placement of students. How are we doing on placing students that come out of a given program, like George Fox or like Lewis and Clark or other folks that train teachers? How are we doing on placing them? Eventually getting around to how are they persisting? Are we training them so that they can last in the classroom of today? Because as you all, I think, will understand, the challenges are significant. So it's trying to elevate the profession on the one hand. We're also trying to make the agency be able to operate more effectively and efficiently on the other. So that, in a nutshell, is what we're trying to do.
Okay. Any questions of Representative Johnson?
Thanks.
You did a better job than I would have done.
Oh, I would never say that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. No one else was signed up. Anyone else want to speak on this bill? If not, I close the public hearing on 3351 and open up a work session on 3351.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3351 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Hey, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 3351 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Excuse me.
Representative Vial.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Aye. With that, the motion passes, and I will assign Representative Johnson to this bill. Okay, the only thing we have left, we're going to carry over to Wednesday. It should be a short meeting. We've got a couple of Senate bills that day, but we'll carry over House Bill 3208 for when Representative Springer will be back. Any other business?
We're not doing.
And then we are also not doing House Bill 3395. And with that, the committee's adjourned.
Oh, 3395.
And with that, the committee's adjourned.
Oh, 3395.